Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor, and we've got a lot of things to talk about with Ted Johnson, of course, a 10-year member of the New England Patriots, because we got to talk about the Patriot way. We've got to talk about concussions. We've got to talk about what's going on, because he's now down in Houston and going radio show on 610 in Houston, and there's a lot of stuff going on right now, you know, with the Texans and all that stuff. And Ted, first off, thanks for joining us here with Schooled with a Professor.
John, it's an absolute pleasure. I think I've always been a big fan of yours, so it's my pleasure to jump on with you and talk some ball. So thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start first with the Patriot way, because it's just been a very strange offseason for Bill Belichick. More players speaking out negatively, and of course, I mean, things were so positive during your 10 years there. Three Super Bowls, winning, you had such great success with the defense that you played on, all those different things. And of course, Cassius Marsh was the latest, a former Seahawk, that, you know, basically said that it was so bad for him playing for Bill that he was thinking about getting out of football. He was traded to San Francisco, gets a contract extension. But with the success that's there with Bill, which you know is going to happen, why is it sometimes tough for the players to try to enjoy themselves?
Yeah, it is hard to explain. It's funny, John. I would pull up in the parking lot. I had three coaches. I had Parcells drafted me in '95. I had him for 2 years, and then I had Pete Carroll, who's the fun coach, right? I mean, for 3 years, I'll always have fun with Pete, and then with Bill for the last 5 years. And I just remember driving, you know, when I would drive to work under Bill Belichick, I'd park my car and I'd walk into the stadium. I'd open that door to go to work, and it just like smacks you right in the face. Like, hey, it's time to work, and that's just how it is. Now, we didn't have a problem with that because we all bought in at the time because of the how smart Belichick is and how he'd have us prepared, and we all know the stories about how Bill is with as far as kind of game planning, scouting the opponent. He's unmatched. And so we bought in to the misery, if you will, because of the game plans, is because of just his high football IQ and always having us prepared each week, and we would win. So winning would make the rest of it tolerable, if you will. The Patriot way basically is everybody buying in to what Bill Belichick wants, you know, and it's, guys take pay cuts. They take less than market value kind of contracts to stay there. They'll nickel and dime you. They'll ask you to, readjust your contract every single year. I broke my foot game one in 2003, to give you an example of what I'm talking about, John. And I missed 10 games in the 2003 season. After the season, they asked me to take a pay cut, based on the fact that I played 15% of the snaps the year before. Well, I only had 15% of the snaps the year before because I broke my foot, you know, but they don't care. It's a never ending kind of drip, drip, drip to try and always cut corners and, save money wherever they can. And it's a very difficult environment. If you're not winning, it's a very difficult environment to play in, because one of the things that's very difficult, I think, for players, John, to play for Bill Belichick is the fact that there's not a lot of communication. You know, he doesn't tell you necessarily how involved you're going to be in the game plan from week to week. Now, there's guys that, you know, just kind of know that they're going to be a big part of the game plan, but then there's a lot of role players. And Belichick is, I think, was kind of the guy that really made football more of a situational type of game, as far as certain guys to fit certain roles in certain situations. And so there's a lot of role players. I was a two-down linebacker at the end of my career. But, you know, for example, in the AFC Championship game in 2004, I rarely came off the field against the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the last game of my career in the Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles, the game after, I was on the field for three snaps because of what the Philadelphia Eagles do. But I'm going into that game thinking I'm going to maybe play the whole game. He doesn't communicate with the guys. And I think maybe that's part of the problem. A big part of the problem for guys is you never know where you stand with Belichick. There's just not a lot of communication. And he's very, very old school when it comes to, you know, the mind, you know, playing mind tricks on guys and doing things to kind of keep guys always guessing. You are constantly singing for your supper. And then a lot of people will say, well, what's wrong with that? That's the way it should be. Yeah, I guess, you know, but there's also maybe a happy medium. I mean, Belichick is to the extreme when it comes to that. And I would say Pete Carroll, who's I had a lot of fun. He's the nicest guy I've ever played for, is on the other end of the spectrum. I think there's a happy medium there that you like maybe in coaches. And I don't know who that coach is today in the NFL, but the Patriot way, basically, to sum it up, is doing whatever Belichick says, taking your medicine, accepting a diminished role, accepting smaller contracts, just so you can be on a team that wins. And I think when you see Brady and Gronk have so much success, and I mean, their legacies are pretty much cemented at this point, they're kind of tired of it. So they have the goodwill and they have earned, kind of this ability to, you know, challenge Belichick and to stand up to Belichick and to, you know, question Belichick. And it's interesting to see with those two guys not showing up for OTAs, the two, well, probably most decorated players in the history of that franchise, not showing up for OTAs and not, you know, buying into the quote-unquote Patriot way. It'll be interesting to see how this season plays out.
Contrast what it's like playing for Pete Carroll versus Bill Belichick.
Yeah, Pete Carroll is the ultimate kind of type A positive guy. I mean, it's all about, just communicating, talking to you, relating to players. I mean, Pete Carroll's a very, very approachable coach. I mean, he is. It's hard to explain. He just, you know, he has an emotional investment in his players. You know, he wants to see his players do well, and he tells you that, and he, you know, verbalizes that to you. And today's athlete, I think, resonates more with today's athlete, the younger athlete that likes that feedback. Belichick, you never hear anything from him. The positive feedback is rare. He hardly hands that out. And so that's difficult. And for a game that is very physical, where you leave the game with a lot of health issues and you've taken pay cuts and you feel like you've sacrificed, you know, a lot maybe for the team and for Belichick, and the feeling of not having an emotional investment in seeing Ted Johnson or whoever player do well, it's a tough thing to manage psychologically. You just don't feel the emotional investment from Belichick like you did with Pete Carroll. Pete, you knew where you stood. You know, if he thought, you know, he would give you, you know, positive feedback all the time. Belichick never did that. And I think that's just the kind of great thing wears on guys after a while. It's like, you know, it'd be nice if you got acknowledged for maybe some of the sacrifices you were making. But that's how Belichick is, and he's always been that way. And I don't know if he feels, John, that he has to just be closed off emotionally and act as if he doesn't care about players to have this success. There's a price to pay for this success, right, John? I mean, it's all complete and utter domination by this franchise in the last 18 years since he's been there. And his part of his success and the reason for his success is that he's an emotionless guy, that he can shut off his emotions and he can be cutthroat and he can be vindictive and he can be petty. You know, case in point, the Malcolm Butler benching in the Super Bowl. That was something that was vindictive and that was petty, and it hurt that team that day. I mean, I've been told that was a locker room divided. And that's a head scratcher because I feel like, you know, psychologically that team took a pretty big blow right before the biggest game of the season, and it had an effect on guys. And I think maybe that's why you're seeing Tom and Gronk, stand up for themselves and choose not to be participants in the voluntary OTAs.
That's amazing. But of course, here's the weird one. Now, Cliff Averill just came out and made some critical comments about Pete Carroll, saying that because of the New England game, where of course the play with the interception at the end, as opposed to a running play with Marshawn Lynch, has lingered in the locker room and cost some players the chance to lose some faith in Pete Carroll, who is the positive guy. And I know that's one of the reasons why Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett are no longer with the team.
I think, John, what happens is guys just want the coach that's going to put them in position to win. Like, you know how, like, we all just want to, I want a coach who's going to get the best out of me and put our team in position to win. And so maybe the players just feel like Pete, you know, all this positivity and rah-rah stuff, it might play well for a while, but at the end of the day, maybe players feel like Pete, for whatever reason, I'm not in the locker room, so I don't know, aren't putting them in the best, you know, kind of position to win. And maybe that one play, I hate that Pete's like, you know, being judged on that one play. I know it was a big play. I mean, it was the play, and an opportunity lost for Seattle. But, you know, it's unfortunate that maybe that still lingers in there. Again, bottom line is all the positivity, all the verbal feedback, all the maybe emotional support and just kind of acknowledgement that you get from Pete is nice. But what's more important for players is a coach that's going to put them in a position to win and come up with a good game plan and call a good game. Because, you know, maybe you can look at the Atlanta Falcons 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, where that coach, the head coach, or, you know, a lot of people want to maybe point to Kyle Shanahan as the culprit. They failed the players by not making adjustments and not making our calls. And so no matter how much you like and respect your coach, the bottom line is guys sacrifice so much and put their bodies on the line all the time. And you just want your coaches to put you in a position to, you know, for these guys to succeed. And I think that's kind of the dynamic of play here.
So what do you think will happen now with the Patriots? Because, as you mentioned, I mean, it was a locker room divided because of the Malcolm Butler decision, and it's pretty clear not having Butler on the field in part cost them that game. Will there be the similar type of thing of resentment that will carry through, or can Bill beat that down?
It's going to be interesting to see. It really is, because, you know, what we're seeing, John, more and more, is athletes aren't afraid to say how they really feel, right? I come from a generation, and your generation, like, where you kind of shut up and do your job. And that's kind of how football's been forever. It's that, you know, I mean, we're one die, all die. We're all in this. You know, you're the player. That's the coach. You do what he says. You don't question it. You do what's best for the team, not for what's best for yourself. You sacrifice it. Guys are like, you know, hey, those kind of, that kind of mentality is, you know, kind of a thing in the past. And so players think more, and they are out more outspoken, and they're not afraid to say how they feel. And the impact of what social media is, you can reach a lot of people instantly. It's not, you don't have to wait for somebody to interview you to get your thoughts out there. And so I think you're starting to see, even with the anthem protest, more and more players in the NFL, the younger generation coming up, they're like, wait, this isn't right. Just because the generations before us did it one way doesn't mean we have to do it the same way. And so, you know, my feeling is there's a lot of guys on that team that played in that Super Bowl this year against the Eagles that are going into camp with Belichick and the Patriots feeling a little unsettled about that game, because that was, who knows if Malcolm Butler plays, whether or not they win that game. But I feel like psychologically that team would have been better prepared. And I think it comes down to little things, right, John? At the end of the day, it's a fine line between winning and losing. You know this better than anybody. And psychologically, that team kind of being a little bit shaken by what happened with Malcolm Butler. And those guys are just kind of, they care for their, you know, here's what a lot of people don't understand, is football truly is us against them. When I say us, it's a coach's league. It's not a player's league like in the NBA. Coaches have all the power. They have the guaranteed contract. They have the power to cut you anytime they want. So it's really kind of all us players, you know, also known as like hired mercenaries, how I like to say it, kind of all in this together. And it's the coaches are kind of, you know, they're separate from the players. And so whenever they see a teammate that they care about, respect, that they are friends with, kind of see him do what Belichick did to him, and it just didn't feel right to those guys, it's going to have an impact throughout, and it's going to reverberate throughout that entire locker room. And I think it did. And every little edge counts in the biggest game of the season. And that was a disadvantage, I think, for the Patriots when they went out there and took the field that day.
Now, one of the big topics, and you were one of the first to really speak out about it, is concussions. And kind of take us to where do you think the league is? Obviously, they're trying to help on the concussions. It's a major problem. Kind of where would you grade where the NFL is with the concussion problem?
Look, I think it's a joke, John. I think it's sad. I think it's really sad. Like, there's the NFL's, you know, hey, it's such a PR machine. They want to project one image when it's completely different. The concussion issue is it's a civil war. It's players versus owners and, you know, and coaches. And a lot of people want to weigh in on this deal. And the president is weighed in on it. You know, a lot of fans have weighed in on it. The sad part is, if you're going to get real change when it comes to concussions in the NFL, what is the most important, you know, group of people that need to maybe put pressure on the NFL to get it changed? It's the fans, John. It's the fans. And here's the sad part, you know, and it's just fans being fans. They don't care. They don't want to know how the sausage is made, man. Just play football, shut up, entertain me. I don't care, you know, if you're having problems. I don't care if you're suffering in silence. I watch football for an escape. And I look at you guys more as, you know, robots than real human beings. And that's the sad truth. And when I call fans out for their, maybe their hypocrisy, they get all upset, but it's true. And if the fans had more outrage, then something I think maybe would be done more about it. But, you know, look, the settlement, hey, well, Ted, they gave $800 million to help guys with concussions. That deal was a joke, John. It's an absolute joke. And the judge that pushed that deal through, she should be ashamed of herself, because the way it is written is so bad. I mean, you know, it's like you only get paid if you're diagnosed with a brain disorder. Well, hell, John, by that time it's too late, right? I mean, by that time it's too late. Well, we're giving guys all this money to, you know, they have funds to go get tested and all this stuff. Okay, great. You know, fine. But it's a pimple on the ass. The money that they gave in that settlement is a pimple on the ass compared to how big that problem is. And you know who's disgusting in that entire thing, John? Was the plaintiff's lawyers. It was such a money grab, and it was disgusting because the plaintiff's lawyers were pushing that deal through. I don't know how many guys actually signed up for that deal, but it was thousands. Make 20, I've heard 40,000. I don't know. I was one of 100 guys that opted out. One of 100 that opted out because of how bad that deal is. You know what? And here's the sad part about that. There's a lot of guys that aren't getting paid. I mean, that they filed and they've had doctors, diagnose them, and they've declared there's maybe some issues with them. Yet the NFL is still dragging their feet and not paying these guys. And I don't think it's ever going to change, John, because the fans aren't putting pressure on the NFL to create change. And so I think this civil war is going to last for a very, very long time. They're going to tiptoe and dance, and they're going to kind of throw some money at it and throw a program, and this is what we're doing. But at the end of the day, it's all talk. It's all BS. It's all rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do to kind of sum it up? What would be, if you were commissioner, if you were the guardian of the league, what would you do to fix up the concussion problem?
Yeah, I think what I would do is I would find teams, I would dock draft picks. You have to have a stronger fine system on teams if there's negligence, if they put a guy back out there before he's ready. Hit them where it hurts. You know, these little fines, all these investigations that the NFL has, give me a break about this. You know, this so-and-so got concussed in this game. We're investigating. And then what happens? 3 weeks later, the NFL finds nothing there, and all go, you know, people forget about it, and then the world moves on. You know what? If there's negligence on if they declared negligence on how they diagnosed it, or they put them back out there before they should have, they went against doctor's orders, that kind of stuff, hit them hard, John. That's the only way it'll get this thing to stop. Because the way this system is built, John, it's built to fail. when it comes to concussions. You know why? Because football, of all the major sports, what's the biggest difference between football and basketball and baseball? It's, there's not guaranteed contracts, right? There's not guaranteed contracts. So that creates this environment where players are going to hide. They're not going to disclose. They're going to give in to the teams and say, okay, they're going to, you know, and that's what happened with me. We don't need to get into my personal story, but there's a point where it's like, you know, these players are going to, they're going to sacrifice their future health because they're worried about losing their job. Well, if I don't go out there, are they going to cut me when I'm AMP cleared to play? So, you know, the fact that there's not guaranteed contracts creates this dynamic that's very difficult for players. Hey, players should stand up for themselves. Players need to say something. Okay. At what cost? You know, a lot of guys are afraid to, you know, if you're Aaron Rodgers, oh, he has no problem saying he's got concussed. Ben Ross, no problem. If you're the last guy on the bench, the whole different story. And it's those guys that are on the end of the bench that people don't really care about and the teams don't really care about. And the players have no leverage to say anything because they know they're the last guy on the bench, the bubble guy. So, again, that's kind of what's at play here, John.
Hey, Ted, great catching up with you. A lot of great stuff and continued success on the radio show on 610 down in Houston.
Anytime, buddy. Great catching up with you, John. You take care.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.